First of all, let me extend to both Peter and Hal my sincere appreciation for the opportunity to be here. Actually, I had completely forgotten about the 92 paper, but I guess maybe I have some of that in my presentation. This is our location in Miami, Florida. It's about 204 acres. It's basically a germplasm lab, but we do have an entomology component there, as well as a genomics program. Okay, the title of my talk is Insect Feeding Attractants, Isolation Identification. A lot of this is going to be kind of information that you already know about, but sitting through a lot of these different presentations, we tend to forget a lot of things that are quite obvious, especially if you're in the arena of chemistry. Challenges of the new paradigm, I think it's going to be quite obvious what those are, so I'm not going to give you any biased opinions ahead of time. Okay, so what I'm going to like to present today is systems to collect volatiles, analysis and identification techniques. I'm going to leave out a lot of the high-end, sophisticated multiple gate decoupling of using NMR and stuff like that, because most of us don't really have access to it. So I'm going to stay with those type of instrumentation that's typically found in most labs doing isolation identification work. And then I'd like to talk a little bit about some formulation methods that are really critical, because all three of these components do add up to a successful a discovery in terms of host finding host attractants. Okay, let's talk a little bit about system to collect volatiles. It's something that I've been working on quite a bit over the years. On the top here, Oh, where's the arrow?
You've got to use the mouse. Start moving the mouse a little bit.
Oh, okay. I'll get it right, yeah. I'm not used to this sophisticated stuff. Okay. Anyways, if you just take room air and you don't filter it, obviously it's very difficult to find out what's actually being released by the source, so you do want to go ahead and purify it. These studies have been published. You can see that with using just charcoal as your filter medium, you can certainly purify that air, thus enabling you to identify what is present. Okay, now a little bit about volatiles released, and I believe this is from the 92 paper. We want to look at how one goes about it. One can do a whole plant, and one can do a cut plant. In some cases, it may not matter, but certainly the volatiles that are released are going to be quite different. Okay, also you want to look at probably the time of day that these volatiles are released. And what one can do is do this manually by changing out your collector filters, or there are some more sophisticated systems that make this all very easy to do. Okay, these are some of the systems that we have developed over a period of years. This system here, what we're doing here is we have a charcoal filter on the front end of the collection tube. We're pulling air through the filters located here. There are three filters, so we can do time a day, a time a night studies on this system. The system here on the bottom, here we actually purify the air, also we humidify it, et cetera, and we pull a vacuum on here, and I'm going to talk a little bit later about this little add-on here. That's for using a SPEMI type syringe for collection. This is something that Pete Landolt showed you. Here's a system where we have a plant down here. The plant is intact. It has a guillotine type system on the bottom with a hole that goes around the base of the plant. Air is pushed through here at the top at a fairly high velocity. And our collector filters are along the base of this system. And this was actually quite an antique now, because there are commercial systems that are available. I'm not really promoting this company here. This happens to be Amoco Research Systems in Micanopy, Gainesville, Florida. But they sell these type of systems here. This is a completely inert system with aluminum, Teflon, et cetera, with a large number of ports. You can put the whole plant in here. You can do time of day studies. You can do all kinds of sophisticated studies. I will mention that Mr. Manukian, who is an engineer, worked in my lab, helped us in the very preliminary developments, and then has now commercialized the system. But if you look through their catalog, it will give you lots of ideas in terms of systems you might want to build, or you know, perhaps go to them directly. Okay, I'm not going to get into all this, but the systems get quite sophisticated with a lot of electronic controls that negates the effort of you having to be there at 2 o'clock in the morning to switch out the filters. Everything is done automatically for you. All the pressure differentials are taken care of. All the humidity is preset via a computer-based system. And this is just all the mechanics of it. Seemingly a bit sophisticated, but if you're going to do a lot of these type of studies, you may definitely want to look into the so-called automated systems. Okay, now, well, how do we collect the material? Well, we, over the years, have been using a little system here. All it is a glass tube that contains Super-Q material, 80 to 100 mesh. It's 20 milligrams of material in a 5 millimeter bed. I should mention that Super-Q is no longer available. This is not good because I'm not sure exactly what the substitute is going to be. We have looked at alternatives to Super-Q, and this is something to keep in mind when you're doing your collections. There's a huge variability on what you're going to collect depending on what the absorbent is, and we looked at a comparison of HACCP CP compared to the Super-Q, which is the yellow normalized, R and S, and you can see as you go through this, and all this is recorded so you can look at it in greater detail, but if you're looking at alcohols, for example, you may want to use HACCP R. Okay, again, certainly for the hexadecanone type compounds, and these are classes of organic materials from nonpolar to high polarity compounds, including aldehydes. We have some amine studies here, et cetera, et cetera. So just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not there. And I say this with a great degree of caution. Again, maybe part of that a paradigm, but I don't want to give any suggestions here. All right. One of the problems that was associated with using these collection filters is you did have to extract them with a fairly large amount of solvent. Typically, we use methylene chloride. If you're looking at the polar compounds such as amines, you might want to use methanol. So again, you're going to have to gauge how you're going to extract these filters. You usually end up with using 350 microliter aliquots, giving you, after evaporation, somewhere around 100 microliters of material to analyze. The problem in the past has been that typically most GC injector systems started to have problems after you shot 5 microliters. Therefore, you were only analyzing a small amount of material. And I know we're talking about plant compounds, and we all think that they should occur there in large amounts. But when you start getting into the apple juices, some of those materials, the amounts aren't as big as you might expect. But this here illustrates what's available now commercially in terms of large volume injectors. We've standardized our system on 50 microliters because it's incredibly consistent. These large volume injectors allow you to shoot over a quarter of a mil of material. What I want to show here, okay, here is we shot 50 microliters of 4 picograms per microliter. This was actually onto a mass spectrometer. For those of you that know what happens, if you shoot too much of a volume of solvent, you're going to burn out your filament, but the new systems do enable you to shoot large volumes of solvent containing a very small amount of analyte or the materials you're looking at. Here we're showing the difference between a 4 picogram times 50 is 200 picograms, and you can clearly see this happens to be a pheromone system we were working on, but these peaks here were the ones of interest. They're readily seen by the mass spectrometer. So the sensitivity of our spectroscopy is considerable nowadays. Now that we have the ability to shoot large volumes, we're looking pretty good in terms of analysis there. I'm not going to talk much about the SPEME systems because there are lots of cautions that need to be used with SPEME. They're a wonderful system. I mean, you can go ahead and you collect your material, you put it in the injector port, you desorb the material off the fiber. It's a one-shot type thing, but it's very quick. But be careful in terms of preferential absorption. It's all over the place. Quantitation, I wouldn't even go there. If you're looking at a comparison of let's say, five species of avocado leaves, and for some reason, you can use SPEME for that because you're doing a direct comparison. But if you're looking in an unknown situation where you're not doing direct comparison, I'd be very cautious about what you think you're getting when you're using SPEME. Anyways, this system here has a SPEME port, which means that in addition to collecting onto the collector filters, we can also use a SPEME system. This is actually automated on our CombiPel auto sampler system. A word of caution here, we were looking at some, as I mentioned, avocado races. We went with the commercially available caps for these systems. We were just taking ground up leaves. It turns out that depending on the race of the avocado, the Asian race, I guess, has a large amount of estragol, whereas the Asian races don't, and there was interest both from some insect work we were doing as well as some genomics work, but we ran into a big problem with the septum material. And you can see here, although it may not seem like there's that much contamination, there is significant amount of contamination, and it turns out that estragol actually retention time was right where this big peak was. We wanted a substitute, or we wanted a way to eliminate this contamination, and we came up with what's called a foam substitute. And the foam substitute is what you usually use in the cap off tubes if you're doing micro biological work with test tubes where you'd have the solution here. This is that foam material that's commonly used. You can autoclave it. The nice thing here, we've used this with solutions, particularly those that are fermenting, where you can keep unwanted materials out, but you can still have the degassing of your fermentation product. So a very simple solution to a contamination problem. Okay, systems to analyze and identify semiochemicals. Like I said, I'm not going to really talk much about the high-ended stuff, but I think all of us certainly have access, familiarity with mass spectroscopy. Let me talk a little bit about the latest in terms of chromatographic techniques. This happens to be a Zeno's system. It's about this big, about this tall. You can carry it around with you. It's battery-operated. It's quite portable. It's still in its developmental stage, so I'm not sure I'd run out and buy one for $28,000 or $30,000, but it certainly is something of the future. A lot of work still needs to be done on it. This just happens to be a comparison of fast GC, not super fast, but fast enough GC, where we have a total retention of 9 minutes. Those of you that are doing GC, get away from those 25, 30, 45, 60-minute runs. You don't need it. Resolution of the columns now, the smaller bores. If you're spending more than 10 minutes doing an analysis, you're wasting time. The Zenos down here, total time for analysis is 20 seconds. Okay, so that's getting down there pretty fast. These just are the comparison between C13 hydrocarbon, C14 on the two systems. Resolution between the two, and you can do all the math on it, it's incredibly good. It's a very excellent comparison. It's very quick. So in other words, you can go from plant to plant, take your samples, they get recorded, and move on. You can also do this, let's say, if you're looking at insect pheromones, et cetera. So the sensitivity is phenomenal. The speed is quite accurate. I think we all have at least a half a minute for analysis. They've got some issues yet in terms of durability. Okay, this is really a research tool at this time. Their software is lacking. Unfortunately, these peaks are quite a bit broader than they really are, and that's because they're using Snagit, a system developed about 20-some years ago to take the data in a chromatographic form. But anyways, it is something coming down the research arena. Okay, I want to talk just a little bit about mass spectroscopy in terms of identification. Things that we tend to overlook that can make our lives a lot simpler than they are. We're all familiar with EI mass spectroscopy, electron impact. That's what the libraries are built on. And we get some pretty decent matches, particularly with the quadrupole systems. But a lot of times we don't get good matches, and we flounder around trying to figure out what the molecular ion is. This is critical to those people working with terpenes, okay? Because most of the terpenes are 204, 204, 204, all right? But what does that mean? I mean, how many compounds can have a molecular weight of 204, and you hope you get the right match, and you go out and you buy, maybe you can get it commercially, the material, and you're all ready to start your science publication. You inject it, but it doesn't have the same retention time. Oh, we got a problem there. All right, so one of the things that we do commonly, and these are all available now in commercial instrumentation. I don't know why Pete's laughing, but they're all commercially available. When we talked about chemical ionization years ago, I mean, it was a spectrometer that was the size of this stage here, and you needed a full-time technician and a couple PhDs and all that stuff. But nowadays, it's a matter of for about another $15,000, because you need a higher vacuum pump system, you can get an add-on onto your mass spectrometer, and it tunes itself. I mean, you push the button, you say, I want to run CI, and it says, okay. And what's the big difference here? Okay, here's what electron impact of dodecine 1-0 acetate, or pretty much any one of your terpenes, looks like with electron impact. Well, it's not a lot of information. If you do chemical ionization, I apologize for this lab, it's a slide, but you certainly see a huge 229, it's an adduct of one proton, because that's what chemical ionization does, but it clearly indicates what that molecular weight is, and it gives you some very characteristic fragmentation. So if you're working with a chemist and they're not quite sure of what you do, ask that person whether they can do CI. Okay, just some other examples of what you can do with chemical ionization. Here's a comparison of alpha ionone. This happens to be a comparison of the EI, which it does give you a lot of information, but this is with CI and isobutane, again, picking up some significant ions and less fragmentation, which is often critical in the structure elucidation. Here's an example using methanol, okay, the liquid. You can use liquids and gases. As a matter of fact, the new instrumentation will flip back and forth between various reagent gases. It's quite phenomenal. Methanol is an excellent one if you're looking at sterically hindered alcohols. So is ammonia. It pops it right out, almost to the point of giving you the position of that functional group. Another question that sometimes comes up is conformation amongst the terpenes in terms of is it this or that, is it this isomer or that isomer. You might want to look at what's called mass spec fragmentation. That's where you take an ion of interest and you take that ion apart. Again, all commercially available. This is not really high-tech stuff. And this just happens to be the parent ion, or actually it was a daughter ion of 136. We were very curious about the fragmentation of it in the big picture. And again, you can see very readily the fragments of the daughter ion. Okay, I think on the next end of where you might want to go if you can't get good structure elucidation in terms of sensitivity is certainly Fourier transform infrared spectroscopy coupled with GC. Sensitivity of that type of instrumentation is around 200 nanograms. Okay, now as I mentioned before, you can see 4 picograms with mass spectroscopy. So as you go to the more sophisticated instrumentation, your sensitivity is going to drop off. If you go to something like nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy, which I think is the jewel of all instrumentation, you're talking in the microgram range. So you're going to need lots of material. Okay, formulation systems. All right, you've done all this work. You've isolated the material. You know you got an attraction. Everything is going really well. You've identified it. You've gotten the material. You're already. How am I doing, Pete? Oh, he dropped the clock. 3 minutes. Okay, very good. All right, so you've done all this work, and you're really, man, this is going to be great. This is awesome. All right, I mean, I got everything figured out, right? Right. Well, not exactly. Okay, because you know what the plant is putting out, for example, maybe this ratio of 20% A and 13% B and all this stuff, and so now I'm going to throw it into something or other, and okay, I mean, what the heck, I put this in, I should get this off, right? No. There's lots of disparity. There's lots of errors one can have in mixing chemicals and formulating chemicals, and I really believe that there probably would be a tripling, if not more, in terms of findings if people would just pay more attention to what it is they're really testing. We all, you know, we go out there and we say, well, what the hell went wrong? Well, we're not presenting what the insect wants. We've concocted this. There's certain chemical relations called Raoult's law. What happens when you mix chemicals of different volatility, et cetera? They're going to come back to bite you. All right. So formulation is critical. All right. Just a couple of references here. Cadonius back in 1982. They actually did have a couple of there were books. On formulation methods, pretty much covers everything all the way from filter paper, cotton wicks, etc. One of the things, and I was just talking with one of the people here, was the idea of capillaries. You're all familiar with these little 50, 40, 20, 10 microliter capillary pipettes, we call them. You can seal the bottom off. You can put your individual compound in there. The way you do the release rate is you look at that surface area of a 50 microliter, see how the level of the liquid goes down over time. It's a perfect system, not something that's necessarily field compatible, because if there is movement in that capillary, your synthetic is going to go, you're going to have a wall effect, because the release rate's based on the diameter of that capillary. Some of the more innovative people have made these capillary systems up to 35 millimeters or something. They call them vials. All right. Okay. So that anyways, you can find a excellent description of how capillaries work in this article by Weatherston. We did came up with a predictive model for use of pheromone systems and rubber septa. Rubber septa tend to run into problems with a molecular, well, with compounds less than about a C10, but they certainly work very well at higher weights. And then I just want to talk a little bit about another option that's available, and that's a release rate modulator. You can find it in a patent. If you're going to use it for experimental purposes, forget the patent, but it does give lots of information on how to make it and how well they work. It's a very simple system. What it does is it's like 5,000 capillaries. And the way we make these 5,000 capillaries is, in my case, I talked to my wife because she knew something about cross-stitching. I think that's the thing. It's a little grid system that you buy that's plastic that has a whole bunch of holes in it. And when you look at it, you, without any beer, you'll see hundreds of capillaries there. And all you do there is you put it in a non-permeable membrane. You put a filter paper in there. You put release rate substance. This can be a garbage bag. It works quite well. The same material that you would find in garbage bags, and there's sophisticated systems. You can go into the products catalog and get them. There are various membrane materials. You put that on the one end. You seal this. Well, you put your material in here, seal it all up, and how well does it work? Well, Dave isn't here, Dave Robacher, but Dave had looked at Chipotle volatiles and the volatiles from these flowers, and it found that there were four components. How am I doing, Pete, in time?
You're cutting into lunch. No, go
ahead. Okay, what Dave found was a combination of hexanol, ethoxanoate, cineol, and ethoctanoate, and he wanted to formulate them to test them. We put it on rubber septa. It's all over the place. It's no good. All right? But with the release rate modulator, you see we do have a decay over time, but nevertheless, you can see that all compounds were emitted. We put them all in 1:1:1:1. They were all emitted at a very consistent release rate and ratio. Longevity was fairly good. The other unique thing about this system is what Dave really wanted was a 2:2:1:1. We added that to this release rate modulator system, and that's exactly what we got off. So it's a very easy system to work. It's something you can actually make in your lab. And I guess I am done. Thank you.
Any questions for Bob?
Lunch. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Does it matter if you push
the push-pull system is a little bit trickier because you have to have a balance in terms of the pressure. You don't want to put the insect or the flower or whatever it is, the organism, under either too much of a positive or too much of a negative pressure. It's not hard to balance them because you got a flow meter for air coming in, you have a flow meter for air coming out. What we do with the system I showed you that allows SPEMI is we'll actually have a 2% excess of air flowing in. The system with the charcoal is actually quite nice because it behaves according to ambient environmental conditions. So if you're working in 80% humidity, you'll get 80% in that chamber with the pull system. The pull system doesn't purify quite as well as the push-pull system, but it's quite adequate. Yeah.
Super-Q, it shouldn't be entirely impossible to make that. I heard Super-Q wasn't anything but four-pack rinse with HDL. Shouldn't there be a recipe somewhere out there?
Should we buy four packs?
Yes, no, and maybe. Our research the work that we've been doing, and actually I've been doing with Ara Manoukian, we've been in contact with the polymer chemists from a number of various companies, and it was a proprietary material. And you're right, it was Porpac Q, but they made some what they consider to be minor modifications, including the size of the material. But they also played around a little bit with the polymer. And all they'll tell us is that Porpac Q is not Super Q by any means. So, yeah.
I was in contact with someone from the company, and they made it sound like it was more or less just a perfect rinse with HDL.
They did for many years, and then all of a sudden now that's not available. They're saying, I mean, when you talk to their polymer chemist, not, you know, but when you talk to their polymer chemist, they're saying no. So, I mean, it does have us bothered.
So can you buy the old Porapac Q from Altec?
You can buy Porapac Q, yeah, but it's not the same. Be careful there. I mean.
Well, how about the other absorbents you listed, can they be cleaned with methylene chloride?
Yes.
Yeah, that was always an issue with 10X.
Well, of course, yeah, yeah. You really, I don't want to generalize too much, but be careful with 10X. It's, I don't know. I mean, if you do, I have a thermal desorber system, and there are some times where you want to use it, but, you know, I like to keep life simple. I am getting too mature. Ah, there you go. To get complicated. I'm like this guy. I'm sorry, what?
You had, you know, things that will make it greasy, caramel or something like that, soluble, and also to use it to dilute it in your release. Maybe like an extender.
Oh, yeah, you can. Yeah, you sure can. You can take let's say a high molecular weight fatty acid, for example, and you can add a hydrocarbon to it. And it will change the release parameters, usually decreases the release of the material with no effect of the hydrocarbon. Yeah, you can definitely do that. Yes, sir. How does what? No, never, ever. If you want a clean air, it's wonderful. Yeah, but you'll never get a lot of compounds out. Anything that's slightly polar. Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to use it for terpy, well, I'd be careful there. If you want to use it for hydrocarbons, go for it. Amides? Yeah, okay, that might work. Yeah, but there's too many other, I mean, things that are more, I think, if you get a specific application, and again, that is the, in part, a paradigm, is, you know, if your system's working, don't change it, whatever you do, all right? I mean, publish it and then retract it. I mean, no. Yes, Wendy.
What?
I can't hear.
What would you recommend?
What would you recommend as a substitute?
For substitute.
Oh, right. Right now, I would go with the.
The best one on this line.
ASAP Q probably. Yeah. I didn't show it here, but ASAP Q is probably your closest to Super Q. But don't quote me on that, because I don't want to. Somebody going to go out there and come back and say I spent 3 years collecting on this and I missed, you know, a component.
Is that an Altec product? Can you say that?
I think ASAPs are all. Altec. The point I'm trying to make here is if it doesn't work, if you're getting some type of behavioral response and your chemistry isn't right, it's not the insect. Okay? I learned that from this guy here.
Can I write that down?
No. Seriously, though. I mean, if you understand the behavior, and that's the beauty the joy I've had with my career is working with people. I don't want to point, but anyways, a lot of people here that have kept me straight in terms of the real world, because the world of chemistry is fun, but it's different. I mean, to me, why would you need anything besides ultra pure helium, right? For everything, you know. I mean, put the insect in there. I can put helium over it. All right, I'll give you nitrogen. Fine. You want moisture in there now? I mean, what is it with you? But no, the same thing with plants. You really have to be careful in terms of the physiology of the plants. That's why these systems are designed so that you don't stress them out, both in humidity. You can get some huge, beautiful changes just by stressing the plant, let's say changing a humidity regime or a temperature regime. It's quite different. And when you're working with, like I had the experience with Pete, he did it all because of the darn insect. He didn't care about me, but, well, okay, maybe he did, but no, I mean, that's critical. When you know that there's something there and you got that level of confidence, your problem isn't with the insect. Thank you.